for May the 13th, 2022, we talk about Space Punks, Resident Evil Village, House Flipper, and much more. Welcome to Level 414. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Weissmith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Back here, I want to start off by thanking folks who came out to watch the stream over the weekend, the past weekend there, the Reproductive Choice stream. It was a good time. I didn't hear a single line of dialogue on any of the cartoons we watched, but just because we were constantly goofing over it. Thanks everybody for doing.
What did you guys watch?
So we streamed and watched, it was a bunch of stuff. We streamed, Super Mario, Super
Zelda, Mario Brothers.
Yeah. Like bad 80s and 90s, video game cartoons.
A lot of do the Mario dance in credits of these episodes.
Yes, and we could not talk over it at all. Will yelled.
I remember one as a kid that was like Mega Man and a whole bunch of other characters all in one show together.
You're thinking of Captain N, which is it had Mega Man in it as a minor character on the good guy side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it was Captain and the Nintendo Master or something like that. Yeah. So I just wanted to put that there. And now I hear Dottie. Okay, that's not a I'm sad or hurt meow. That is a I am carrying my toy around the house and I want people to look at me meow. Yeah.
She's got attentionitis.
Yes, she does. Yeah. So with that out of the way, how are things doing? How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing good. I was excited today. I hit a weight loss goal that I've been going for a while. So I'm finally in. I'm in the 180s now. Ever so briefly, because I celebrated by eating a giant lunch, and I'm probably going to have a beer tonight. So going to quickly jump back out, but I was happy about that. So I got some running in yesterday and been eating salads and stuff. So
nice.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that was my happy milestone for the day.
Cool.
I guess a side note, when this episode comes out, new Kendrick Lamar album will come out. So that's exciting for anyone who's into that.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Neat. Dennis, how about you? What's up?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Mother's Day was this past weekend. So happy Mother's Day to any mothers listening. And hope you guys remembered that on your side.
We did. Yes.
I spent the weekend kind of doing dad celebrating Mother's Day kind of things, which was a good time. Made pancakes with the boys before mom was up in the morning, and that was fun. We did like wrote letters with the batter and all that stuff, so yeah. It was good times. We making the batter in a blender and mixing in like chocolate chips and sprinkles and stuff like that. Like, all the things, which is great, except, we poured it into a plastic bag and then you nip off the end so you can like pipe it to write the letters.
Right.
And the chocolate chips, the hole I made was not big enough for the chocolate chips. So
you got to plug it up. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the first time I just tried squeezing harder to get the chocolate chip through, and that went exactly as you would expect it to go.
So, the letter O.
It was like M O M splat. a fun weekend.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I did remember, and got cards and all that. So it's one of those ones in the era of electronic calendars. I still flake on birthdays, but the actual holidays end up just baked into my calendar, so I can see those coming down the way.
That is very convenient.
Yes,
I rely on Reddit to remind me of this.
Yeah, I check the Google Doodle. David, how about you?
I'm particularly proud of my weird or whatever. I don't know. Mother's Day present. My mom's a big fan of margaritas.
Okay.
And the local meadery for Cinco de Mayo made margarita mead.
Okay.
Which sounds completely bonkers, but basically tastes exactly like a margarita. So I got her some of that.
Ooh,
so I'm nice. Just, I just love the idea that like margarita mead is a thing, and that, I don't know, I feel like there are people in the world that need that in their life.
I can see it.
I think you're trying to say margamita.
Margamita.
Meat garita was what I was thinking of. I wasn't.
That works too.
I wasn't proud of it, so I didn't force it in.
Ah, the trick is having no shame.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I'm almost there. Don't worry.
Chipping away at it year by year.
The world's worst influencer. How can an influencer have shame?
I have never called myself an influencer. You bite your tongue.
Yet.
To this date, I have not. I can see mead being having margarita flavor profiles to it. The hard thing would be getting the sour in, I think. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm. Nice. No, I really don't have anything. I've been real sick these past few days. So, it was like really bad digestive stuff and then just completely like wiped out energy wise. So no idea what the fuck's going on there, but,
time. On the COVID,
do you got any COVID home tests to burn through?
I've got them. I don't have any other symptoms associated with that. And I don't have fever. So,
I have literally one left, and it's like whenever there's like any sort of symptom of a mild fever, it's like hair trigger, like, all right, let's roll one out.
Yeah,
and see what happens. Not to change the subject or anything, but I had a weird experience where I watched a Twitch streamer take a COVID test and test positive, like, real time for getting coronavirus. And the thing that was surprising is the line came up very quickly. The one that's like the positive line, like within like a minute, but then you like wait till 15 minutes to like make whatever.
They must have had a shitload of COVID then.
They went to Disney World. So
yeah. Okay.
Oh,
so they had all the COVID. Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well, no, I'm feeling okay now. Just still a little tuckered out, but yeah. Time goes on, work goes on, and I think the regular kind of show we do goes on, what with all of the segments, the grind, the multiplayer, the end boss, and I think we should get started with
the grind,
where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben, in the green room, you mentioned that you had two of them, so I'm going to go to you first.
Yeah, I got some meaty things to talk about a little bit. So I'll start off. I finished Deathloop because I talked about that last week, and cool. I felt like I was near the end of that game. So I beat it within like maybe a day of talking about it last time. So I was close to the end. So I was just gonna kind of say some thoughts on the game.
Cool.
Ending I thought was a little bit lackluster. They continue with the approach of being like really handholdy about like what you should do and where you should go.
Yeah.
And they continue that until the very end, which I thought was like a little bit disappointing, because like the idea is you're trying to piece together like how you can kind of get the stars to align and kill all eight people.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of you like being able to figure it out and like execute it or whatever, it's very explicitly like, go here at this time, go here at this time, go here at this time, do this, go here at this time or whatever.
Yeah.
And so it kind of turns it into like a Skyrim fetch quest where it's like you're just following the icons around. So yeah, that was like a little bit disappointing. Like it is like there's still like good game design in the sense of like how, you know, like the ideas of how you're able to kind of move people around and like shift events around to line everything up. Like that's really like well done. But the fact that it's like so explicit about telling you what to do is kind of a little bit disappointing and a little bit of a letdown.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, I don't want to spoil the ending, so I'm not spoiling anything narrative-wise, but I do want to talk about one mechanics of it, is like the ending is basically like a choose like one of three options, and that's your ending sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I'm just pretty over that as being a game ending anymore. Like,
yeah.
Like the game a game just needs to like stick the landing and pick an ending. It's okay to have like maybe an Easter egg ending or something like that. If there's like a, you know, like some secret that you want to like reward the player with or something, but just like the, I guess like the canonical example I think of is like Mass Effect or Deus Ex Human Revolution, where it's like literally go to one of three directions and that's going to be your ending. And it's just like, I think the problem with that is like just like the impact of all the individual endings kind of gets a little bit deflated with that, where they're all kind of like half-hearted.
I really think that the ending that you get needs to be decided, you know, if not well before the, you know, you reach the point before credits, like your grave better be dug. And I think that it is purely out of fear of negative reactions from the player that that a lot of developers are like, no, we're just going to make it so you can choose.
Yeah, that's actually a really good observation. Like if the endings were tied towards your actions throughout the game, they would have be much more meaningful, and I would be much more okay if that were the case. If it's like, okay, even if it's just like three different cutscenes at the end, if it's tied to your actions, I think that's fine.
Yeah, a game that ironically enough doesn't actually do this, but I feel like has that feeling very well is Spec Ops The Line.
Yeah.
Where like you definitely get to a point in that game where you're like, well, I've made my bed, I'm apparently going to go sleep in it. ironically enough, like it then at the end does the whole like choose your ending thing, but you know, at least it had the feel.
And this is just kind of something that I've like noticed playing games in general now, is like I feel like I'm either understanding games less, or games are doing a poor job like explaining like what the narrative is. Because like literally with this game, after I beat it, I had to go and look up like a wiki on like, okay, what was I doing, or like what's happening in this like universe. And like, granted, like a game's not going to be able to translate like everything 100%, nor should it, you know, because that'll probably be a boring way to present like a narrative. Like when you look at the timeline of events in Deathloop, it is actually really interesting, like seeing, you know, like the overall thing. Like that part's fine. One of the things that's kind of a little bit muddied is like some of the characters' motivations are a little bit like unclear in the game, even after completing it, even after reading like wikis and stuff. For example, like the whole premise of the game is the main character wants to break this loop of, you know, like dying and waking up over and over again. But they never really establish why the character wants to do that. And even after reading like the wikis, they never really say why that's the case.
I'm stuck in a loop and I want out, not enough. I guess there's a bunch of other people in the game who are kind of enjoying it, so
maybe that's the deal. And I guess it's kind of cut against is the main antagonist in the game, is Juliana. She very explicitly doesn't want you to break the loop and wants to keep the loop going. And again, that's not really well, even after like understanding the full context of the story, that's not entirely well understood why that motivation's there.
Yeah.
So that's like a small detractor. But I don't want to make it sound like I didn't like this game. I think the place where the game shines is the game design, and like all the different ways that the different levels can interact with one another, all the different like Easter eggs that are in the game. All of that makes it like a really, really good game. It's just that the narrative in a few of these places kind of holds it back from being like a 10 out of 10 type game.
Yeah. This is a point that Gary made in the Watch Out for Fireballs about it, but it really does feel like Arkane's like final word on level density, like the density of level design. You know, like how much can be packed in there and how much they are kind of utilizing differences in spaces and cramming them full of stuff over those four time zones. Like
it's kind of like a bait and switch. It's not actually four levels, it's like 16 levels, but they all start with the same like framework, you know. You know, like base design. But yeah, totally agree with that. And yeah, that's like another strong point is the game design of it, and like how a single area can be completely transformed depending on what time of day it is. Another like minor nitpick with like character motivations, like one that bothered me is like, so you're trying to get all these people to a single place. There's one in particular where one of the characters is established as like a workaholic, and that's kind of their weakness. So you get them to go to a place by like sending them some sort of message, but then they like just stay there. They never talk to the person they're supposed to talk to, and they like none of it. Like that part like doesn't really line up. But these are just very, very small nits.
I believe they do.
Well, if they have a conversation, what I witnessed of the person was that they were just hanging out at the party and talking to themselves.
Gotcha.
Like for like, I don't know, several minutes, I guess, like 10 minutes or something like that.
Yeah. I saw them on the roof talking to the other person about how frustrated they were that they were forced okay. to break, break the protocol because none of the visionaries are supposed to, be together specifically yeah. because of what you are trying to do.
Yeah.
And so she's really pissed off that she was misled and put the entire island in danger. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, yeah, the other thing maybe you could do a stealthy way. I'm curious how you did this, Cole. For the final like mission or whatever, I just killed everyone in the area. And so I don't know if you did that or not, or if you more stealthily did things.
Final mission.
The final level of the last time of the day.
I didn't kill everybody. I mean, I killed everybody that I was supposed to, but like, I did the stealthy thing for the first guy that I could in the basement. And then the other two, it was just a big battle on the rooftop and that was it.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. Hopefully that is sufficiently vague, but there's a special, kind of very Dishonored style, kilt that you can use, for Alexis, because he's real particular about his drink.
Yeah. I had played that mission like a couple times to kind of practice for it before mm-hmm. doing the final run. And it had been a low enough percentage of me being able to like clear it stealthily and leave uh-huh. that I like literally as approaching the party, I'm just killing everyone I see because I don't have to fight them on the way back when I know the alarms are going to be off.
Right.
And I mean, and that honestly, that worked out better. It was a lot easier getting to the exit then at the end, instead of like having to fight through everyone with yeah. like possibly weakened health. So.
Yeah. I also didn't care about stealth at all in this game outside of making a good first attack. And that was it.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice to know it's there as an option mm-hmm. and there's like sometimes where you can use it and it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. And yeah, it, yeah. Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, overall final thoughts of the game. Great game design. Yeah. Gameplay mechanics, I think, are good. The guns are great. The shooting's great. The stealth is good. The multiple approaches to a given area, I think, are all really good. Level design's really great. Narrative could be patched up in a few places, but overall it's not bad. And the handholdiness, like, I don't want to completely like naked, but like the during the beginning when it's introducing you to the mechanics of the game, it is very good how they like are very explicit about telling you where to go and what to try and stuff like that, because that's teaching you the mechanics of the game, and then they should like let you loose from there. And I think that would have been a better way to handle it.
But, yeah.
All right. Any final questions about Deathloop?
Can't wait for you to talk about it again next time through the loop.
Did you find the everything that you had to do with the power station to be just the fucking pits? Was that annoying to you? Having to go back there like three or four different times to get the
complex? Or which part?
There's a point on one of the leads where, in order to get to some of the bunkers under the city when you're looking for Juliana, you have to power the doors, and it requires like three different loops to get all of them.
You could technically do it in one, but it's really hard because there's six generators.
Okay.
And so, but one of those generators, there's a bunch of traps on it, and if you trigger it, it'll blow it up and it's unusable.
Okay.
And so you get 100 power for each one, and it's 200 power to do any of the power stations. So if you clear the traps and get all six generators, you can just power the other three and then hit them all in a single like day run if you wanted to.
Okay. Yeah. No.
But I fucked that up. So I was able to do it in two runs, but yeah, it is a little bit annoying that you have to like go back there and do the same thing over again. But,
yeah. Yeah. I just, yeah. That was a real nadir for the game to me.
Yeah. Like there's not like a huge reason why they shouldn't just let you be able to power everything on in one go.
Yeah.
Cause yeah, it still eats a day doing all that, but overall I wasn't too, I thought that would be a problem in the game, like having to retrack and do a bunch of things. But overall, I was pretty okay with it because you can skip time if you want to. And there's not too much of that stuff where it's like, you need to go here at this time to set this up so that you go here and then do that. Yeah, so I wasn't too put off by that. But yeah, I could definitely see somebody having a worse time with that, though, yeah, than I did. All right, on to the next game. So it's also able to start and finish another game in the past week. I played Resident Evil Village.
Oh, cool.
Evil Village. So this game's probably like a year old now, maybe. Is that right?
Coming up on it, yeah. I think May 20th is when it came out.
All right, so I'll... I'll try and give a spoilerish free review of the game. I'll probably talk about like the general structure of the game, though.
Yeah.
So I guess be advised. So it's a weird opening to this game, and I guess a couple different ways. I never played the previous Resident Evil that had Ethan, the one that's in Louisiana. So I might go back and play that at some point. But I don't think it's like critical. They give you a recap option if you haven't played that, which I think is sufficient for letting you know what's happened. But the premise of this game is, you know, one event or another has led you so that Ethan is in Transylvania and he walks through a village. He sees a castle. He's looking for something that's in the castle. It's like the premise of the start of the game without spoiling too much. So that's like more or less how the game starts in the first 5 or 10 minutes. The first third of your game is going through this castle and being chased around by hot vampire women.
Oh yeah.
And in addition to a 9.5 foot tall woman, is a weird start to a game because it's not exactly a horror game at that point. It's like a weird like kink testing if you're a guy.
Awesome.
But it's very like, I don't like, who is this? I don't know who this is for or whatever. The game does not seem very friendly towards like female players. If that's like part of their target audience. Not least of all, because without saying any details more, like you see a woman be like shot brutally in them pretty early on in the game. And it's just like, this seems kind of slanted towards who the possible audience that might enjoy this is. So kind of weird opening to the game. But after that section of the game, it kind of opens up and you kind of get a good preview of what the structure of the game is. More or less is there's four different places and people you need to see in the game that are these children of the main bad person. And the idea of the game is you need to go to these four places and get the MacGuffin. You need to get one fourth of the MacGuffin at each of these places. And then you need to like face the main bad person.
Yeah.
And the structure doesn't really change from that much at all. Like it sticks pretty close to that. So it's a pretty simple game. It took me 10 or 11 hours to beat it. I bought the game for $40 because I guess it's like, that's what the price is reduced to now. I am very good with that like transaction because this is very like, you know, this is like a AAA game. It's a very polished game. And it has like good presentation. So for like an 11 hour experience for $40, like I think this is like great for that. It's like similar to like a Lost Legacy, like Uncharted type of, proposition.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think the game, like when it was released, the full price was like $60 or $70. I don't know if I would have been as happy if that were the case.
Mm-hmm.
Some like comments about the characters. One thing that's like really cool about the game is like the art style and the setting and the boss bad guys are really cool. It was about halfway to three-fourths of the way through the game that I realized like, oh, all these characters are takeoffs of like the Dark Universe characters.
Mm-hmm.
So like obviously vampires are vampires. But it's like, oh, this one is kind of like, you know, the Mummy or Dracula or Frankenstein or like whatever. And they're all kind of like adjacent to these characters or like twists on them. And that made it like a lot cooler, I guess, where it's like, oh, this is like a really cool like modernization of that. I guess the one I'll explicitly say is like, and the one that made me realize what it was, is there's like a steampunk Frankenstein, where it's like somebody who's creating these like mech people with the Resident Evil like virus type stuff. But he's like creating life, you know, like he's like a doctor and stuff. And he has some mm-hmm. other attributes beyond that. But it was like, oh, that's really cool. And I think his name's Heisenberg instead of Frankenstein, but German as well.
So what does this game look like for someone that's into, I guess, Resident Evil for more of the action-y type things? Like, it seems like this is a little bit more action-y than 7, maybe?
Well, so I can't compare it to that. I can compare it like to 4 or like the remake of 2. And it's like, honestly, it's just a Resident Evil game. Things like the weapon upgrade system and like all the different artifacts that you find in the area, like that is pretty on par with Resident Evil 4. And that's like a compliment. That's a pretty high mm-hmm. compliment. Like you have the thing where it's like you have tokens that you can combine, you sell them to a merchant. The character of the merchant is awesome. His name's the Duke. Mm-hmm. Really awesome character design on that. Really awesome, like how they integrate them in the environments and stuff like that. All that stuff, I think, ties pretty closely to the Resident Evil 4 formula. The only difference is it's first person instead of third person. There are a couple places where I think it's maybe not as good as Resident Evil 4, especially with respect to like the upgrade system. Mostly because I don't think there's long enough time at the end where you get a play with like your upgraded weapons that are like fully upgraded.
It's really made for New Game Plus at that point.
Yeah. And the other piece is when you fully upgrade a gun, there's not like a overdrive type mechanic on it like there is in RE4. At least mm-hmm. I didn't notice. So correct me if I'm wrong here.
I think it's only for specific ones.
Okay. So like, yeah, the one I'm thinking of in particular is like Resident Evil 4 when you upgrade the Red 7 or the Red 9 or whatever, like firepower goes crazy with it if you get everything upgraded, and that's like an awesome reward. And then you have like the entire last chapter of the game to like own people with that upgraded power weapon.
That's the one where you can kneecap people at when it's upgrade, right?
I'm not sure. I mean, you can shoot people, or like kill them by shooting them in the kneecap with one.
There's one where instead of it stumbling them, it would explicitly break their knees and cripple them.
Is that in Resident Evil 4?
Pretty sure.
I forget it if that's the case. I forget which one. I just know the overdrive for Red 7 is power. I'm pretty sure it like mm-hmm. maxes out the power.
Yeah.
So anyway, the gun upgrade system is like similar here. It's not 100% as good in my opinion, but it's decent, you know, because they're using like a good formula that already exists there. I think like the general like, you know, weirdness of the bad guys and stuff like that's pretty on par for Resident Evil series. One thing I noticed in this game in particular, it seems like kind of a crutch for them, is it like maybe outside of one, it seems like every bad guy turns into a giant pulsating flesh bag with like their face attached to it.
Yeah.
And I guess this is probably,
again.
Yeah. And I guess this is something that just the series does in general. But I literally went back to Resident Evil 4 to see if they did that here, because I didn't remember it being as like explicit there. And so with Resident Evil 4, there's Salazar who doesn't. He gets brought into a flesh monster that was like an external thing. He himself still is like human until the end. Krauser. He has like a giant, like weird fleshy arm, but it looks like more like an,
it's like a bat wing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like more like an augmentation that he wants to like be cooler. It's not like he is like a monster, but then, the last two, Sadler, he's like the actual monster where he like mm-hmm. he morphs into a monster. And that kind of made it more impactful when there was only one that was like explicitly this giant, like horror blob type thing.
It's leaning into the gigantic tumor monster thing is a real, that is a real Resident Evil 5 and 6 kind of detail. The fact that all of them, for all intents and purposes, the ones that you have actual fights with kind of do that, is not necessarily a surprise, or it's not the RE8 is not doing it first, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely believe that. But I do think it's kind of like a crutch where it's like, okay, this is the default like monster design we're going to have at the boss battle. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, sure. But like even in Resident Evil 5, when you fight, was it Sunglasses Dude Spencer? Is that his name?
Wesker.
Wesker. Like, that was an interesting boss battle because he has all these like Matrix moves or whatever, and it's not relying on him being like a fleshy monster that chases you around or something. Yeah, you know, like, so I guess that's what I'm kind of getting at is like, it would be like, even though the boss fights are like differentiated, the character design kind of is pretty samey across them.
Yeah. You know, also, I don't think that the big flesh monster thing necessarily looks very cool, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And like when they did it in, you know, I've been thinking 2 and 3. So in 2, Birkin eventually turns into one of those. That's motivated by the G virus and what happens, and is kind of meant to show his degradation and slip from humanity, which is kind of what that villain arc is kind of all about. And then in 3, it's supposed to be about Nemesis's tenacity more than anything, and also the fact that what you see as Nemesis is not the actual creature, it's the parasite inside of him that's doing it. So maybe 8 is taking it a little bit from that angle to a certain degree, but it's also a trick that only, you know, those tires only have so much tread on them, you know.
Yeah. But like outside of the final form, I think the character design on the bad people is great.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of where the game shines. Here's a question. Does anyone care about Ethan or Mia as characters? I know I don't.
No, not really.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to ask in case like the previous game, like for some reason, really like established Ethan as like a identifiable character or whatever.
He's too dumb to live.
yeah, like he just like generally just yells like fuck you at the bad guys and stuff like that, and then just screams a lot.
This isn't to say that there aren't cool moments with RE7, you know, and what happens there. Sure. Although everything that you've seen in RE8 is, I mean, you know the twist of 7 if you've beaten 8. I think it's still worth playing. It's just that Ethan, you know, he doesn't behave like a person does.
Yeah. So that's kind of the low points of the characters in this game, I think, are those two. But since it's a first-person game, you don't really spend much time identifying with Ethan, so that's fine. Yeah. You can kind of get past it. The other thing I think that's funny, again, just kind of my reference of playing this game, not having played the last few, is Chris Redfield is like full-on Snake, Solid Snake now.
It's egregious, actually.
Yeah, it's... Well, I mean, I'm okay with it. It's like... Japan's just being like, what is the US like right now? Or like, they're like America plus 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 right now. All right, that's what we're gonna make Chris Redfield.
Yeah. did you play or see any of the anime or any of that?
No.
It is not particularly good. I'm not saying it because of that. I'm saying it because it straight up has zombie gun kata.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I last played 5, and so that's where I saw Chris Redfield last, is like uppercutting boulders. So it's not like the pinnacle of realism or anything like that, but it was at least like he wasn't like talking in a gruff voice and, you know, like, I don't know.
And leading a military unit of reject weirdos called Hound Wolf.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that said, some of his moments in the game are pretty cool. So, I don't want to say much about like the latter half of the game or the ending of the game or anything like that. There were points in the game where I'm like, oh, this is a terrible like story choice, but then they like corrected it or like they made it revealed
something new about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's some goofy ass like body horror in this game. Stuff that just does not make sense. So it's surprising, both in good and a bad way. I don't know what to make of it. It's just really weird.
Yeah.
Body horror that is should not be possible, but like, oh, I'll throw some like health medicine on it and then it'll all be okay.
Oh, that's like, that's motivated by the by the reveal.
Yeah. I get that they tried to make a rationalization for it. It's still very funny, I guess. I don't know.
So does Ada show up?
No.
Not that I saw.
that's worth all on its own an extra like 2 points on the 10-point scale.
Man, you and Jala, not like an Ada.
I don't mind Ada in 4. I haven't played other iterations, I guess, but yeah. I think last thing I want to talk about is just kind of like the general game design gameplay of the game. They do, it's kind of like Metroid like where, you know, like as you're going to the different bosses, you kind of have this hub world of the village that you're walking through, which is like the village that's right next to the castle is the, mm-hmm. the first place that you go in the game. It's kind of a cool way to do it is you basically get tools that'll unlock being able to explore different parts of it in a very Metroid like way. Mm-hmm. But it's like kind of nice design of like having like a nice little like home base that you can kind of go through and kind of progressively unlock different parts of it. They have a really good map system in the game where anytime you enter a new place, that'll be illustrated on the map instead of having a fog. Like that's pretty common. Mm-hmm. But whenever you enter a new room, it'll color code the room based on your partway searching through it. Like there, but there's still things there versus yeah. you found everything in this room. You don't need to be here anymore. What that kind of turns into though, is you just like a crutch relying on looking at the map and be like, all right, have I found everything? Maybe that could just be me and how I play things, but it's like trying to like 100% clear everything. Like yeah. you're just constantly looking and be like, okay, there's one thing here. And then having to try and figure out like, well, maybe there will be like a cutscene here later and there will be an item here later. And I just don't have access to that now. So maybe I'll stop trying to like comb the entire room and like do that later. But they do a good thing where, and towards the climax of the game, they disable your ability to look at a map so that you're not doing this, so that you're playing the actual game and enjoying it. So I thought that was a really good choice on their end. Yeah, I think other than that, one thing that's really cool is the merchant. This is a really cool mechanic. They will cook recipes for you. Mm-hmm. So there's like animals scattered throughout the game, like, I don't know, like rams or fish or chickens or whatever. And you can kill them to get like different types of meats that are also stored in your briefcase. And then you can turn it in for them to make recipes and they provide your character like permanent buffs in the game. Like you permanently have more health. You can permanently move faster, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really cool. I thought that was like a nice, like tiny mechanic that was just very satisfying and just integrated really well in the setting.
It's nice to be able to get character upgrades, and I like how it's built into the character of the Duke.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just, it's raising everything that it touches in terms of quality. And then the other thing that's funny is one thing that's kind of different about this Resident Evil than other games is you block to like you it's kind of like a mechanic in the game that you press a button to hold up your hands to block an attack coming in. Mm-hmm. And that's like kind of baked into the gameplay where it's like you're expected to block like a battle someone is swinging at you and then you like shoot them and when they're really close to you, and just kind of like juggling between those two modes of like mm-hmm. shooting someone who's very very close to you and then blocking so you don't take a lot of damage. Like yeah. you take significantly less damage when you block.
You can do parries and stuff. It's a great way to reduce the amount of healing items that you end up using.
Yeah. So that was interesting. They probably had this in 7 as well, maybe? Or
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's okay. It's more relied upon here, but yes.
Yeah. So that was interesting. That said, I did play the game on easy mode, like all the way through to Rush Through, just because...
No shame on that.
I played on normal, and like there's too much restarting. It's like... I just don't want to do this. I just want to enjoy the game.
Especially if you hadn't played 7 yet and gotten used to its weird style of shooting. Yeah, that's sensible.
So I had a great time with it, but I will say that you can take away my gamer card since I did not play it on the true difficulty. So.
I don't intend to.
You have a gamer card?
Not anymore. But I think that's everything. But yeah, overall, Resident Evil Village is pretty satisfying. Everything has strong and weak points, I guess. But yeah, mm-hmm. if you can get the game for like $40 or less, I think that's a good deal for it. But
yeah, it's frequently on sale too.
Yeah, yeah. So any questions about that?
No, I'm happy you enjoyed it.
Sweet, that's mm-hmm. all I got.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I've got just one new game, but first, a huge accomplishment that Ben will appreciate. I finally beat the heart in Slay the Spire on Ascension level 20. So
nice. Which character?
The Watcher.
Okay.
And I think I'm at it's like 18, 17, and 15 with the others, so closing in.
The Watcher is the little kobold thing?
It's the lady who changes stances.
The purple. Oh,
yeah,
what's purple. What's the cobalt thing?
Wait,
what is the cobalt thing?
It's like some little dude in a cloak that, I don't know.
Is it the silent?
Yeah, the silent, maybe.
The green one?
I don't know. I'll have to look it up.
The green dino head one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the silent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Deals with poison. But yeah, for anyone not familiar, after you beat the game the first time, you know, you can unlock ascensions, which basically add modifiers that make it more difficult all the way up to 20, and 20 is the hardest that it gets. So I've now done that with at least one character, and I'm very happy about that.
Nice.
I think I looked, and collectively across the PC game and then the mobile version that I'm playing now, they're identical, but I've spent about 600 hours on the game.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, not a small amount. But yeah, so that's just a milestone I hit. I'm happy about that. The new game I'm playing is a game that just arrived in open beta really this week. And I found it for, of all things, because of a banner ad. So this is like, you know, maybe once or twice a year, I will see a banner ad that actually makes me go, huh, and click on it.
Okay.
And that led me to Spacepunks.
Oh, yeah.
Space. and I need to delineate, this is different than Space Lords.
Okay.
However, on paper, the games are very similar. So they are co-op games where crazy characters kind of shoot their way through waves of enemies, and it kind of has a living game bent to it. But whereas Space Lords had way too much attitude and kind of shoddy third-person shooting, Spacepunks is basically Diablo plus Borderlands. So it's the Diablo perspective. You control it like a twin-stick shooter, and you know, you have crazy guns and everything. The art style is very similar to Borderlands, but instead of your abilities being like Diablo blood rage and magic and necromancy and stuff, it is various kind of gun themed things. So this is very early beta, and the game is fairly unpolished still, to the point that one of my mission objectives had placeholder text in it.
Okay.
Like, add text from it was like add text from column here or something like that. Like, it was clearly someone's note to finish it.
Yeah.
And there are other small glitches that pop up. But the fundamental game that it's over top of is really, really solid. Like, Diablo plus Borderlands is a kick-ass formula.
Cool.
Yeah.
So does that have a similar thing with like the slot machine type stuff of getting guns and like upgrading guns that Borderlands has, or?
Yeah. And it's, you know, they're going for a free to play model on this, so it's got some of that bullshit in it, but nothing too egregious so far. You will get guns as drops during your missions. And then there is a whole kind of crafting store where you can unlock blueprints, upgrade those blueprints, and then craft guns from those blueprints. And each time you upgrade the blueprint, it takes a certain amount of time. And the higher the blueprint gets, the more time that takes. Right now, they literally have all the pay-to-play stuff turned off. Like there's a shop for like the premium store where I imagine eventually you'll be able to pay actual money for stuff. But it literally, if you open it up, it's like, you know, grand opening soon. And they don't have anything to buy for real money. So I imagine there will be stuff to speed up the upgrades, but you kind of got to tread that hamster wheel, if you want to get better equipment through crafting. Each piece of gear has a power level assigned to it, and your power level is just the average of those. So you've got your guns, you actually have melee weapons, and then you have trinkets and armor, like that. It's all kind of bonus stats, but your gun and your melee weapon are the major things. And even within that, I would say, you know, melee weapons really don't have too much of an impact. So you can do a normal attack with them, which, you know, maybe if you, if you're out of ammo and instead of reloading, just need a little bit to finish off an enemy, you might use. But then eventually you unlock various skills on your skill tree. And the third one of those is a heavy attack with your melee weapon. And so that, that gets some use, but otherwise you're completely focused on the guns. And they got everything. They got chain guns, you know, miniguns. They've got sniper rifles. They got shotguns. I've seen people with flamethrowers and all kinds of crazy stuff. So, you know, there's a wide, wide variety. And then, you know, higher rarity versions of the guns will have different modifiers attached to them. So you might have bullets that bounce or, you know, imagine Borderlands, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Is there like an upgrade system to the guns? Like if you find one that you want, can you stick with it? Or is it just like a progressive, just grab whatever the better gun is as the game progresses?
Yeah, my understanding is eventually, yes, you can upgrade a specific piece of gear. But I haven't unlocked that shop yet, and don't know if that's an economical thing to do. So far, like the, I've always had something new drop to grab for, more so than feeling like I needed to try to stick with something. I did, so like I mentioned, you know, higher rarity of things, have special mods. So you might have something that's, you know, power level 50, but your is common, and something that's power level 40 and, rare has some mods that makes it better, which is excellent. You know, fine, chase your bliss, go with the lower power level thing that's actually more powerful. But some missions are gated by your average power level. And so I had, I think I had a couple of rare items that I was sticking with for a while and then found myself unable to go into the next story mission because my power wasn't high enough, even though I was stomping with the gear I had. Mm. So like I said, it's early beta. There's a lot of, you know, polishing, things like that, that'll happen. The, you know, the character progression is kind of cool. The, you know, there's different skill trees along a couple different themes. And, I spent a lot of time browsing that Borderlands style, looking at like, ooh, I could do this with my character. I could do this with my character. By the way, there's four different characters. Each one has a different set of abilities. But then I found out, and I hope this changes, the skill tree is identical for all four characters.
Oh no.
So all the thing is things like plus 5% damage, range damage, or plus 5% melee damage, or, you know, negative 10% ability cooldowns and stuff like that. And I guess I didn't realize it when I was looking through for my character, that they're just all, you know, those same things. There's nothing that's unique to a character's abilities. So even though the characters have different abilities, your upgrades are going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I hope that's placeholder, because the underlying game, the like running around and shooting stuff, you know, especially if you have a squad of people, is really, really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything else to say. The other unpolished thing that I hope they figure out is, you know, there are chests in each level that you can open up for bonus rewards. And, you know, if you're doing it free to play and you have to right now, you kind of want to make sure you get the most out of every run, but those chests don't show up on the map and you can't see the indicator for how many chests are left unless you just opened up a chest.
Huh.
And so I'll have missions where, you know, I finish the main objective, you know, whatever, 10 minutes in, and then I spend another 10 minutes running around the damn level trying to find all the chests before I evac. Because it's just, you kind of just have to run through every section of the level.
Yeah.
So that's hyper annoying. I think they'll figure that one out. But overall, like the moment to moment gameplay is very good.
Hmm.
So yeah,
nice.
That's the new one that I've been playing, putting a lot of time into that.
Is it multiplayer?
Oh yes. Yeah. Intended. Sorry. That's, I guess in my mind it was inherent in the Borderlands description, but yeah, not at all. I don't think I clarified that. Yeah, like both the Diablo and Borderlands, you can play with up to four players. And in fact, there is no way to queue solo right now.
Oh,
It will automatically join you up with a group. There is also no chat, voice, or text right now.
Okay.
I don't mind that.
Yeah.
Generally, yeah. See,
those are two features that you shouldn't have one without the other. Either let me be solo or let me mute people.
Yeah. No, this is you cannot not mute people. There's no way to communicate in the game with voice or text.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So honestly, that's totally fine, right? Because it's like if you have friends, you just get on a Discord server or whatever, and it's not a big deal.
Absolutely. And you know, the gameplay is straightforward enough, especially once you're past the opening levels. Everyone kind of knows what to do. That you can just kind of rampage around the level together. And you know, generally it's kind of funny. I mentioned with the chess, you'll get towards the end to the last objective. It'll be kind of clear that you've got things under control. And one or two people will just kind of be like, break off and start running and looking for chess before the final objective is completed. Cause everyone's like, okay, we gotta get some runners out there. So we're not here all day trying to clean up.
Yeah.
So, you know, everyone kind of gets it and has played nice for the most part. Yeah, so I'm playing. I've heard her described as the Skrillex lady. She's got the
asymmetrical haircut.
Yeah, the asymmetrical haircut. And her, I forget her actual name, but she's like basically experimented with nanobots, and half her body is nanobots. And so she kind of uses that in her abilities as you're playing, which is fun. But there's like your typical Han Solo type, then there's a giant bug man, and then there is a mini boar man. Go figure. I mean,
how do you know he's a mini boar man? How many boar men have you seen?
This is fair. In comparison to the bug man, he is mini. But yeah, you know, they've got a lot of their little back and forth banter. It feels very Borderlands-esque, and it's kind of happy-go-lucky nature.
Yeah, I felt like, to me, so I guess spoiler, I'm probably not actually going to talk about it because we're talking about it now, but like I also played this.
Good.
Yeah.
And I felt like, to me, what it did better than Borderlands is the fact that it was silly, but to me, a lot of the joke, it seemed like they were kind of channeling, was the fact that these are characters that think they're really cool, but are kind of just dorky.
Yes. That's a good way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
What character are you playing, David? I'll kind of play over to you.
The Star-Lord ripoff.
Yes, yes. Very cool.
Yeah, and I feel like he is my ideal character because his abilities are straight up just like has grenades. Like
grenades and a decoy, right?
Yeah. I am a big proponent of, in these sorts of games, my ideal class is like gunhaver.
What weapon are you rolling with right now? What's your favorite so far?
Right now, I'm doing the chain gun. I haven't unlocked a whole lot, actually.
Okay, yeah, chain gun has been one of my favorites. I like the beam rifle, which I'd call it a sniper rifle, except, you know. What's that? Okay, yeah. I'd call it a sniper rifle, except there's no way to, like, aim down sights in this game. It's a, you know, twin-stick shooter perspective. Yeah, that one's good. And then I just started messing around with a shotgun, which I think I really like. So more play needed to figure that one out.
But yeah, I think I unlocked the shotgun, but haven't actually used it yet.
Nice. Yeah. What other thoughts do you have on it, if any?
That's the main thing. I would like to see more voiceover in the, like, NPCs in the hub world. In terms of, like, mission objectives and stuff like that. But like you mentioned, this is very much, like, at the placeholder text stage of development. I think what you said pretty much tracks. I do feel like, you know, we're talking about taking away people's gamer cards. I feel like the fact that you have to check the, how many loot things, like, what, that wasn't the only thing you were looking at as you were working through?
I'm not in favor of this taking away people's credentials. Dennis, did you have anything beyond Space Punks?
No. Transition. That was the alley-oop to David.
Gotcha. David, then.
I don't have a whole lot, honestly. I played a little bit of Space Punks and a little bit of, was it Loot River?
Yeah, that's what cool. What'd you think? Dennis was talking about last time. Yeah.
I like the idea. The actual gameplay really hasn't clicked for me. It seemed to me, it feels like it wants a comparable level of like thought and precision to a Soulsborne, but the 2D top down whatever doesn't give enough feel and feedback in order to make that viable, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the low pixel art style as well doesn't help it. On that front, especially if there's a lot of enemies on screen at launch at once, it just gets very confusing, like who is what and
right, you know. And also, like, for example, like the parry mechanic, it felt like I felt like there wasn't enough feedback, one, on when you parry successfully, but also like what the parry window is, and you know, just all those mm-hmm. sorts of things.
Well, that was an interesting idea that I didn't mention because I didn't play around with it, but one of the stats upgrades your parry window along with a couple of other things. So by upgrading the stat, you make it easier to parry. I don't know if there's other, you know, games that do a comparable thing, but I saw that. I was like, oh, huh. You know, I need that. I'm bad at parrying.
Right. So, yeah. So I don't know. It seems interesting. Seems promising. I'll be interested to see if it can stick the landing. Is basically where I'm at with it.
I'm surprised you are voluntarily sitting down to play a roguelite.
Yes, but it has progression, so.
Okay.
I have no idea how the progression works, because again, the game doesn't do a good job of explaining things, mm-hmm. but.
Gotcha.
David, would you play the Stanley Parable if there's progression in it?
Maybe.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just waiting for the 10 years to get that achievement. That's the progression, right?
Yep, that's
no,
right.
No, you can see all the endings. Achievements are not part of the game.
Other than that, I actually completed the current expedition in No Man's Sky. So that's the pirate themed one. So basically there's some pirate group that is appearing out of nowhere and attacking freighters and then disappearing out of nowhere. So you have to track down these three freighters that they destroyed, and you find out that their captains were, you know, discovered these pirate secrets. And so, you know, created a map, and you have to find the three pieces of the map.
Okay.
And then ultimately you figure out like how they're able to, you know, appear and disappear all over the place so much. And you track down and get to their hideout and, you know, find their treasure.
You're describing Treasure Planet. This is Treasure Planet.
Yes, I am. So it's. Very much, yeah, that. I think the weirdest thing, though, is you never actually meet these pirates that, like, the whole expansion is named after, or expedition is named after, and that's the big baddies of this whole thing. You never even meet.
You only see their works.
Yeah, which, I don't know. I feel like... I get what they are going for. Again, not sure they stuck the landing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and then other than that, sorry, this was very much a week where I played just a smattering of everything. I'm back to Destiny 2. This, they currently are running the Guardian Olympics.
Okay.
So, basically, there's a whole bunch of challenges you can get. And you can, you know, by completing them, you get medals, and then you contribute those medals to try to get your preferred class to be, you know, have the highest score and be the best guardian class.
Okay, so you're not just fighting to represent yourself.
No.
Is that weighted by the player base of the classes? Because I mean, it's been a long time since I played Destiny, but I seem to remember like hunters basically were the class that everyone played.
Yeah, that's apparently yes. I know that only because of discussion in the Slack where someone mentioned that in passing.
Mm-hmm.
That it is somehow weighted. I have no idea how that works. It's again, like Destiny, you know, has no time to explain what it doesn't have time to understand. So I only vaguely know what I'm doing. I'm pretty much just, my overall goal is to understand the missions enough that I'm generally shooting at the right things. And that way numbers go up until they don't go up anymore, and then I've completed the mission. Yeah, it's real problematic. I think the most frustrating thing though is I bought, you know, you have to like basically buy with the, you know, limited currency or with the event currency, the challenges you want to try to beat in order to get the progression. And once you buy one, you can't get another one until you've completed that one.
Okay.
And I didn't know the one I got basically requires me to defeat enemies in a legendary difficulty map. And the thing is, I'm not even close to being geared to be able to do that. So basically any of the like champion level enemies, you know, any enemy that isn't just cannon fodder, I literally can't damage fast enough to kill them.
Oy.
And so my only thing I can do, and because of that, I can only make it to like the first or second room in the level. So I just have to run those same two rooms over and over again to slowly grind up the progress.
Hmm.
So yeah, this is a very good game that is very poorly made.
But if it never actually releases and it's always being worked on and what you're playing will go away soon, is being well made necessary?
I mean, it appears that their bottom line doesn't think so.
Well, small detail.
Yep. So yeah, that's all I got. Guardian Olympics, a lot of fun. I really like the idea that the Guardians, in addition to, you know, actually guarding the world and protecting people, are also kind of sports stars. Mm-hmm. You know, it's some of the dialogue of the NPCs implies that the PvP matches are apparently televised. So I don't know. I like that world building bit, but other than that, yeah, just make the numbers go up till they don't go up no more.
Sounds like an MMO to me. Yeah. Was that all you had?
That's all I got.
Cool. I only have one, and it's one that I talked about a lot before, because I've been sick, and, you know, not necessarily had a lot of time to play, but also, been just looking for something comforting. I've been, dipping into House Flipper again, which is very much just doing the yard work simulator, quite literally, because I've been messing around with the garden stuff. So, right now it's an awful lot of taking on jobs that are like, I need these plants put out and put these plants in and pick these weeds and mow this, because my yard is mowed and my weeds are taken care of. So until there are more weeds or more yard for me to mow. I guess I'm going to do it in a game. it sounds ridiculous, but it actually is a pretty fun game, and it does, you know, scratch that itch in the brain that is more about establishing order out of chaos. You know, this is, yeah. You know, especially like when you do the jobs, like when you buy a house in it and it's completely wrecked, you know, or you do a job where it's like, yeah, these tenants totally mess this place up, and you go in and, you know, set it right. And kind of the before and after are pretty good. That, and you do gain resources and get skill ups to be able to do stuff better and faster. Which is a nice, satisfying progression. So, like, instead of painting just one strip of wall, you can paint three strips of wall at a go if you want to. You make better use of your resources. You do stuff faster. So it's a nice little curve. But yeah, I recognize how cartoonish it is that I play and talk about this game. But I think it's actually really well done and does a good job and fits into that, you know, janky sim kind of genre that I am a sucker for.
How fast would you get a collab game between House Flipper and Power Wash Simulator where you're just power washing the outside of a dirty house?
Pretty fast. To flip it. Pretty fast. I've got some power washing to do here at home. I just have to, mm-hmm. I haven't checked my, every spring I worry that my power washer is going to be wrecked because I got it from my family, you know, and it sits out in the shed and, you know, stuff can get at it there. Squirrels can chew the lines. And it's kind of one of those things where I need to be in the right frame of mind to fire it up because it is a high pressure thing that might explode if it's broken.
So getting a window into Cole's mind right now.
Yeah. So you gotta have the right, the right frame of mind, but no, my deck needs a spray in. And my garage door needs a spray in too. Yeah, so that's all I got, honestly. Any questions about House Flipper?
So this does not involve actually flipping a house. It's not the next Katamari Damacy game.
No, it's not an Incredible Hulk game.
Are they making a second House Flipper game?
Yeah, I brought that as an end boss a few weeks ago.
All right.
Yeah.
And that one will have you just press the F button at any point and it will flip the house.
Only when you're in the Dracula's castle. Yeah. And only after you've beaten the game the first time and gotten the secret ending.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice folks?
Yeah, looking for some inspiration this week, because it's always fun to have one medium inspire another. So what song or work of art would you want to see inspire a video game? And this isn't like direct adaptation, but like the oeuvre, the tone, the style, the feeling would make for a good game.
Yeah. And we'll get started here with Sean, who says Bohemian Rhapsody. I haven't a clue what the song is about, but I'm sure someone could turn the lyrics into an insane, fantastical, twisted game, which we would love. That would be a really good idea for a game jam theme, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just to say, and David seconds this, not David on the show, but Facebook commenter David seconds it. That would be a really strong concept for a week-long game jam. Just pick an aspect of Bohemian Rhapsody and make a game out of it, because it is.
Has there ever been a Wayne's World video game?
Yes, for the NES, SNES, and Genesis.
All right, so that's probably the closest we've gotten so far.
They're not good. They're actually really, really bad video games.
Oh no.
Yeah.
I was going to say the proportions aren't exactly the same, but Inside kind of feels like the same as far as explosive second half.
Oh my gosh. Let's see, Ben, what does Callum say?
Callum says, I'd like to see the tone of Soundgarden Super Unknown used to inspire a game. Would probably lead to weird, trippy hellscapes.
I am not sure of Super Unknown.
I guess it lives up to the title.
Yeah.
That is the one that has Spoon Man and Black Hole Sun on it. Yes, it is the Soundgarden album, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd generally be down for any of these for any of these music inspired jam kind of deals.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Let's see, David, what does David say? I didn't do that intentionally.
David says, just gotta have Cole's version of Facebook jail. So I'm going to play nice and say Losing My Religion by R.E.M. Imagine the guitar riff playing quietly in the background while trekking through dreamlike scenery akin to Hollow Knight, while scenes you think you thought you saw play in the background.
So first off, don't fucking pander to me. Second off, it's a mandolin, not a guitar. No, I think what David is referring to with the Facebook jail thing was that referring to that week where I was just talking about banning people left and right for saying things I disagreed with. Yeah, you have a good starting point in Tarsem's musical video. Musical video. You know, one of those musical videos they're making for songs on the television.
You can watch it on the YouTube.
Yeah.
Tarsem directed R.E.M. music videos. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was one of his first big ones. Was Losing My Religion. Yeah,
sweet.
Hmm. Yeah. Let's see, Dennis. What does Greg say?
Greg says, "I hate to use the picture used, which is a pixelated version of artwork The Scream, but a horror slash mystery game with the premise of hearing or figuring out why someone was screaming in a strange world would be fun. I think
I would want a game." That was a retelling of the multiple times that the scream was stolen. Yeah. Edvard Munch's The Scream has been stolen multiple times and has been, missing for a good portion of the history, ever since it was, ever since it became popular.
That's hilarious.
It's this weird improbable thing. God, I loved our history class. That was fun.
I would pay anything to be able to see the guy walking out with it. In my version, it's under his arm, and the scream, face being perfectly like, "Oh no, I'm being
help, help!"
Too perfect. Yep. The point raised with using the scream and trying to figure out why someone's screaming is it's really a sound design challenge. What is the most listenable scream? Because it's gonna be centrally featured.
Yeah,
Wilhelm is up there.
Wilhelm is a relatively short scream as far as things can go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Doesn't ever say it's welcome.
Yeah, I'm just imagining this when you say a sound-oriented game. This just being the horror version of Beyond Eyes.
That exists. There are sound-based horror games on iOS, at least there used to be. Who knows if you can still download them because it's a nightmare. But there was one called Papa Sangre, which is a horror game played entirely by sound.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking it's like a hot and cold game where just anytime you're moving away from the target, you're hearing screams.
Oh, yeah. Just punish you with the most unpleasant sounds imaginable. Let's see here. Jeremy says, I would like everyone that worked on Resident Evil 7, that type of game, and the Silent Hill games to sit down and read a couple of the main books of H.P. Lovecraft. Start a new series of games based on that, please. I don't know that you would get Capcom and Konami to sit down, most of all because Konami doesn't exist anymore. But I appreciate the sentiment.
So Lovecraft's works are public domain, correct?
Yes. Good number of them are. I'm not sure if all of them are.
I am. I'm surprised that you don't see more games like, the Call of Cthulhu games that are like directly out of an H.P. Lovecraft story instead of just kind of using the monsters and general theme.
Yeah, I think it just costs too much to censor out all the N words.
Well, there is a little that. Bit.
Or you could address it in an interesting way, like with the Sinking City, mm-hmm. which was all of the, it was not directly a Lovecraft story, but it was Lovecraft gods and monsters and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Ben, what does Tom say?
Tom says, we've had Baczynski games from FromSoft, with FromSoft. Now give me a Bill Sienkiewicz. Sienkiewicz inspired game from the people who did Vampire.
Oh,
what is Baczynski?
So Zdzisław Baczynski would be my answer. I don't know that we've done maybe a little bit of Elden Ring is somewhat inspired by Baksinski. Zdzisław Baksinski is a surrealist painter from Poland, who his most famous work has been been really popular on the internet for a while, at least among horror nerds, just because he was a contemporary with H.R. Giger, and he does very similar
He basically does the cover art of all of the Lovecraft books.
Yeah, I'll put a Google image search, and you can see.
I'm scrolling through it now. Yeah.
I love Baksinski's work. I would love to have a huge print of those, but they're really expensive. So I'd be curious.
As art should be inaccessible to the common person.
Yes. Yeah. And I've not necessarily seen Sienkiewicz, at least by name, but it looks very like Hellraiser-y.
Yeah, he's a comic book artist, or at least is known for that. And it's got a very almost like not graffiti, but splattered painted style.
Yeah. This looks really, let me see here.
It's very chaotic. Dark.
It's real kind of wispy, real ephemeral. I've seen a style similar to this. He did a run of Moon Knight. He did some art for I'm getting lost in this. There we go. I recognize the style at the very least, but that'd be cool. Let's see. David, what does Andrew say?
Andrew's Memento. There's some serious potential for a great, unique game based on a character with short-term memory loss, or playing the game starting from the end. I feel like that's like the inverse of all these time loop games.
Yeah. Take that concept and turn it on its head. Just have a quest log that's constantly erasing itself.
We have to unfinish the quests, basically ruin a bunch of things that are put together well.
I do like that answer, because that is something that's kind of done to death in, like, it's done in movies in multiple places, and it's done in TV shows in multiple places, so it would be interesting to see it done in games. I can't think of a good example of a game doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Dennis, what does Kyle say?
Kyle says, Mussorgsky's Night on Bald Mountain. Fantasia's take on the piece traumatized me, and I'm sure many others, in childhood, but I'd love to see a video game studio balance the alternating tones of foreboding and whimsical but unsettling.
Yeah. Night on Bald Mountain is one of those ones, like The Sorcerer's Apprentice, that is never going to get disassociated with Fantasia.
Yeah, straight up topless centaur ladies as well, which is great.
Yeah. Which,
good old Disney.
You know, if I was Mussorgsky and I could comprehend animation, there are worse things to have your work forever associated with. So it's not bad.
Oh no, 8-year-old me was thrilled.
Oh my gosh. For me, because somebody already used Baksinski, and because we're already getting those, like The Medium is kind of based on that. Scorn is one that's been coming out for a long time. I'm gonna go with the comic artist Fletcher Hanks. You guys know who Fletcher Hanks is?
I'm looking it up right now.
He is an artist who was active like in the late 20s, early 30s. Just a complete indigent drunk. Frequently just traced over other people's work to make it his own. And
as all great artists do.
I mean, quite literally, but ended up making something that is really wonky, and you know exactly what it is when you see it, because nobody else could be shitty in this exact kind of way. Specifically his series Stardust the Super Wizard, where it's just this guy who goes around punishing mobsters in like really ironic ways. You know, just really cruel. Like, this is a fate worse than death. Like, I'm going to shrink your body so it's nothing and make your head gigantic and send it flying into space forever. you know, like that kind of stuff. It just completely like it completely unpredictable and bizarre. Just like, what if there was a capricious God who hated you? And he came down and just meted out the worst kind of justice possible. That is what I would like to see in a video game.
The wizard looks like his head has sank about halfway down his neck in all these pictures.
Oh, and he's different he's different from frame to frame.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. That'd be mine. Ben, how about you?
So I'm going to go with the book, Gödel Escher Bach. It's one of my favorite books to be inspired game. So it would be like a recursive game where the mechanics of the game are describing itself. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice. I tried reading it and it was over my head. Yeah.
There's a lot of math in there that I kind of take for granted, I think. I was rereading it like a month or two ago and it was talking about isomorphisms. Like, yeah, I remember that from math class. I can glaze over this part, but
yeah, it might not be
user friendly.
It was requiring too much outside reference for me. I tried. Mm-hmm. I know you like it, but yeah.
Yeah.
David, how about you?
I was having a conversation with a friend the other day about, you know, I really like, and this actually kind of gets into some of the things we've discussed already. I really like the Lovecraftian horror stuff,
mm-hmm.
but we don't get that many adaptations because Lovecraft was kind of an awful person. And we're discussing the fact that, like, it would be nice if they would, you know, just adapt some of the people that were even precursors to Lovecraft, that wrote the same, type of things, but, you know, granted they lived like 100 years ago, so they're probably a little racist, but maybe not as racist.
Yeah, if you've read any of Chambers' short stories that are not in The King in Yellow, he tends to, it gets pretty rowdy.
yeah. But like The King in Yellow itself would be a great thing to adapt.
Yeah. And you're not going to get me to argue with you on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I think that's my pitch.
Nice. Yeah. Like I said, twist my arm. and Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, this is like a half-formed idea, but I want to see like a base building sim management game based on All Along the Watchtower by Jimi Hendrix.
Is the goal to find some kind of way out of here?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're gonna mash up escape room and tower defense
and Vietnam.
the idea is that you drink your wine instead of the businessman.
Hmm.
But yeah, it just, I don't know. It's very atmospheric and foreboding. If you listen to the lyrics, like, kind of contemplating the way out of here, and the maybe two different, resources or approaches to it, where you got the Joker and the thief, you know, so
Jokers and thieves.
Yeah. Yeah. Jokers and thieves.
Just to throw a problem. So they both function so similarly.
Yeah.
I mean, you've even got your class system right there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you gotta generate more women and barefoot servants.
Well, we already kind of got a little bit of an adaptation of a Jimi Hendrix song in Spec Ops: The Line. What with 1983, sure, Mermaid, yeah. I Was Born to Be. Yeah.
So yeah. Why not another?
Yeah.
I think there's lots of fun stuff to mine there.
Yeah. And before anybody says, oh, actually, that song was written by Bob Dylan. Yes, technically, but he handed it over to Hendrix. He said that Hendrix did the better version of it. So,
yes.
Yes. Yeah, just
also covered by Dave Matthews Band, which if you like Dave Matthews Band, it is a good cover.
Cool.
If you don't, then, well, I got nothing to say to you.
Oh man, yeah. It's one of those things where like people get cranky about the cover version being more famous, but it's like, no, nobody's saying, "Oh, Proud Mary, Tina Turner." No, it was Creedence.
Yeah,
no, Fogerty said that she owned it. She took it. Trent Reznor told Johnny Cash, "That's your song now. Hurt's yours now." I like you did it better.
Mm-hmm.
So, sorry, I get cranky about that.
I mean, just like we're talking about stuff outside of your medium, inspiring stuff in your medium, even more often stuff inside your medium is going to inspire stuff in your medium. So yeah. I think covers and songs kind of evolving that way is the way it should be.
Yeah. Thank you everybody for responding. If you would like to participate in the multiplayer in the future, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. And thank you, Dennis, for putting this one up.
Mm-hmm.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Dennis, what is going on with Gotham Knights?
Yeah, I bring this story not because I have any specific affection or aversion to Gotham Knights. I'm sure it'll be fine. But I do find it interesting that they have announced that it is no longer going to come to, I guess now, last gen systems. So PS4 and Xbox One are not going to get a Gotham Knights. You'll have to play it on PS5, Xbox Series X, which you could have put a gun to my head and I couldn't have told you if Series X or One was the newer one.
No, it's ridiculous.
And obviously it'll be on PC as well.
Yeah.
But this, interesting that they're backing out of a last gen version. The game was pretty severely delayed. I think it was originally supposed to come out in 2001. So, I guess understandable they drop it, but even still, it makes it kind of a rarity. Like most AAA games nowadays are still coming out on all versions, all generations of consoles.
Cyberpunk did it first.
And worst.
Yeah. They should have done it sooner. But not release the game sooner, but just, straight up not released it when they did and just put out the next gen ones. Yeah. I think we're going to see more of this. Some game had to be the first and better than me.
Yep. Anybody feel like
good?
I do feel like they shouldn't call them current gen systems if people cannot readily buy them, but
they're like parallel gen.
Yeah.
Yeah, but not being able to buy it truly makes it a next gen system, because maybe you'll get one in the next generation.
maybe your children will be able to get one.
That's right, next generation of humans. Yeah,
but am I wrong, or like does it feel like this generation swap, like the last gen consoles have kind of stuck around and gotten support way past what I remember or would have expected.
I'm really surprised that this has lasted as long as it did. I think primarily mm-hmm. because of what Ben said is just adoption on the new ones is not as fast, even though they are selling well. I think that maybe there is more pressure than there otherwise would be to make games available. But I think this is unusually long.
Like from the game maker's perspective, right? They can't make them exclusive because then you only have like a fraction of the market to sell the game to.
Yeah.
So it's like game companies are being forced to like make it compatible for both. But the architectures of the two systems are very similar though. So it's not like a Herculean task to do that, but
this ain't no PS2 to PS3 jump.
Yeah. But it is like issues with like loading things since one has a SSD and the other doesn't.
So. Yes. Mm-hmm. I can see, especially a game that has this troubled of production, just if we're not going to be spending, we do not want to be spending unnecessary production resources on this if we can help it, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think this will be also a very interesting test case for other games that are planning on having a last gen version and are maybe regretting it or feeling stretched for resources, like with Gotham Knights planning to have it and then backing out. If that goes well on a relative scale, I would expect other people to start doing it as well.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, we always knew it was going to happen. It's happened slower than I expected, but it is starting to happen.
Yeah. I'll go on to mine. Which should be pretty quick. I was just really excited to see this. So Microsoft every year, or at least periodically, puts on an event called the Ability Summit, where they highlight software and hardware accessibility. And at this one, at this year's, just announced today as of the time that we are recording, they've announced a actually pretty expansive set of alternate inputs for PCs, and one assumes that this might come over to this might come over to Xbox as well, where it is basically like a whole system. No, it's a whole bunch of doodads for any kind of input that you could think of, aiming to replace mouse, keyboard, controller, things like that for people of all different kind of, let's say, accessibility needs. And this is not the first time that Microsoft has done this. This is the first, you know, because they have the Surface Adapt controller, the Xbox Adapt thing, where it's like a whole bunch of different buttons that are laid out. This is the first one, though, where parts of it can actually be 3D printed for different specifications. So, you know, somebody does not necessarily need to wait for Microsoft to design the particular thing that they need. This owns. We've already seen we've seen speed runs of people doing stuff with the Microsoft's previous versions of this. And, you know, I talk about accessibility stuff when I see it because it bears repeating, even though it is a kind of a cliche. All of us are only temporarily not disabled. So, yeah,
that's a good way of saying it. I love the 3D printing angle as a way to solve the, like, you know, we're not going to be able to mass produce this.
Yeah.
But how can we make sure that it still feasibly gets into people's hands? Like, that's really cool that they're opening it up that way.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad this makes games more accessible to more people, but mostly what I'm excited about is building my own Steel Battalion controller.
We're going to get there. We're going to get back. Remember what they took from you.
Isn't From Software coming out with a new mecha game or something?
There's a new Armored Core in the works. Yeah.
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 Build your mecha cockpit.
They really don't. Armored Core wasn't about the crazy the crazy accessories, though. Did anybody else have a story, or was it just me and Dennis?
I don't even have an excuse of us going over time. I just could not find a story.
No, it was hard. Yeah, there wasn't too much. Yeah. All right.
I'm boycotting you know, history right now.
Yeah, that's probably for the better. Well, how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Let us button.
The credit. Thank you so much for tuning in to Level 414. It's probably good that we're ending soon because we're having some technical difficulties. My computer is deciding to be a dick, but we soldier on. Well, I guess we don't because we're ending the episode anyway.
We soldier on working on the computer to fix it, which I mean Cole does.
Yes.
Thank you, Cole.
Thank you for listening. Thank you to folks who came out to the stream. Thank you for thinking about going doing the usual stuff. You know how to help a podcast. You've listened to podcasts before. Is there any admin stuff that I'm missing that I should be thinking of, but I'm not?
If you're going to Origin or Gen Con this year, I will be there.
Ooh.
So I'll be at Foreteller's booth, and I'll probably talk about it again as we get closer. But plan now. I would love to meet anyone who enjoys the show.
Nice.
When is Gen Con? Isn't that either soon or recently?
Gen Con is in August. Origin is in June.
Gotcha. Nice. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can find me on Twitter at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me at Origin and Gen Con.
I've been David Meismith. You can't find me because I am hiding from all the things.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. Who has titles?
Got you. Let's see. Got two.
Okay.
One long, one short. The first one is very good game that's very poorly made.
Okay.
And then the second one, sorry for writing down my own thing, is listenable scream.
Okay, I like that. Ben, what you got?
I just have a piddly gamer card.
Okay.
I didn't know how to incorporate that better.
Yeah. Dennis?
Dryad, everyone remembers giving away their gamer card.
Okay.
And then I had, the trick is having no shame.
Okay. I don't have any. I liked Listenable Scream a lot.
I'm fine with
it. I feel like that would be Sugar Bone's next album.
Sugar Bone's callback.
It's a multi-year. That's a 7-year callback.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Excellent. Sugar Bone's got the 7-year itch. Oof.
Oh,
Sugar Bones, I thought you were dead. that's a Mr. Bones reference or Bones reference. Oh my god!
All right, well, I'm gonna go before we have another audio glitch.
Yeah, good hanging out. I will see you guys around.
Take care, everybody. Have a good week.
David, ping me when you play Space Punks. We will play.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, bye. See you guys.
See ya. See ya. Peace. Bye.